Sports Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
Hey, how's it going? And hope you guys are staying warm out east. You know, it's chilly out here. I think it's only going to get up to the mid-60s here in L.A. today.
How dare you? It's unbelievable. It's not too terrible. A little snowy, a little cold. You know, we were talking about this off the air, but it's going to be real interesting to see how All-Star Weekend goes down in New York City. You know, nobody could really get out of here. You know, people were stuck. Flights were canceled trying to get to wherever we went last year. New Orleans, was it?
New Orleans, yeah. And yeah, no, it's, I mean, that's going in and going out. It's a real potential. And I think, you know, the NBA has kept the All-Star game mostly in warm weather cities for a while. LA and Dallas and Orlando and, you know, Vegas and the like. And now they go New York and Toronto back to back. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how the travel works out, and just not only that. I mean, just getting around. You know, if it's going to be snowing and freezing, it's really just not going to be any fun. And of course, fans across the country, they love to hear reporters and media complaining about the weather when they're covering events.
Let's talk about something more important, like the Cavaliers.
Yeah, speaking of cold weather cities, right? It's obviously no fun there. So, Cavaliers got to be the big story of the week. Pulled off a couple of trades. To me, it kind of seems like they're, you know, a little bit desperate, and for good reason, right? I mean, LeBron James is out for a couple weeks. Kyrie Irving missed the game against the Sixers with some back tightness, and they went ahead and lost to Philadelphia, you know, giving the Sixers the first home win of the season. You know, things are not well in Cleveland. So, you know, they kind of had to do something. They don't want things to get away from them, you know, too quickly here. So made a couple of trades. Obviously, the big one was a three-teamer involving New York Knicks and the Oklahoma City Thunder. So Cleveland sends Dion Waiters to the Thunder. They get J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert from the New York Knicks. And the Knicks, you know, basically waived three guys that, you know, weren't going to contribute for them this season or next. Salary dump move for the Knicks. What do you make of this trade for the Cavaliers?
Well, first off, I don't think that was the big one. I think Mozgov was the guy they needed more
sure.
So. I mean, that's the position they really needed to fill was a rim protecting big. And, you know, as I've told a few people, like he is an above average rock solid NBA center. Like, he's not spectacular. He's just solid quality NBA big man that you can lean on. And he's not Dikembe Mutombo protecting the rim, but compared to what they've got in Cleveland, he's going to feel like Dikembe Mutombo protecting the rim. He's just much better than what they've had. So I like that pickup. You know, to me, tell me if, you know, you're out there. I don't know how people out there feel. To me, like in New York, to me, Smith for Waiters kind of thing, and then bringing in Shumpert, that's a solid single. Like, it's an upgrade. Smith at least accepts the six-man role. He doesn't have the issues that Waiters had within the organization, so it's kind of a fresh start. And Shumpert's, you know, I don't think his defense has been as good as his rep. But
right.
He still plays decent defense. You know, again, it's an upgrade. I just don't think it's this massive upgrade. But, you know, Kevin Pelton wrote something really smart, because, you know, the other day from ESPN, in front of the site. But he'd written, you know, if you read Moneyball, Billy Beane had said, whatever you do, don't put yourself in a position where you have to make a trade because you never get enough value back. That's when you have to end up making mistake trades. Well, the Cavaliers had to make a trade. They had to reboot this thing, and I think that's what you see. They got nice players. They got an improvement, but I don't know if they got value for what they sent out.
Well, let's start with Mozgov, right? So I agree with you. You know, definitely above average defensive center, and you know, he's capable of scoring. You know, he's not a total stiff down there, right? He's going to score if you get him the ball in position. He's capable of, you know, grabbing a fair amount of rebounds. You know, numbers similar to Anderson Varejao, maybe a little less on the rebounding, but you know. He's a solid pickup, and I really like his contract. You know, there's an option for under $5 million for him for next season. So, you know, they basically got him for 2 years. You know, as far as people saying, you know, the Cavaliers gave up, you know, two future first-round picks for Mozgov. You know, that's a high price to pay. Well, not really. I mean, not if you're Cleveland and if you're in championship or bust mode. You have no use for future first-round draft picks. You don't want to gut the franchise for the future. You know, you look at situation like teams like the Brooklyn Nets are in, where they have like almost no picks. The Knicks were in a similar situation where, you know, so many future picks are gone, makes it difficult to rebuild. But Cleveland's not rebuilding anytime soon. Cleveland has LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, you know, Kevin Love, at least for, you know, this season and probably beyond. You know, those guys are probably going to stick together.
Yeah,
probably. And, you know, those picks don't mean as much. They're heavily protected for the next 3 years. I just don't see it as giving up that much when you're in Cleveland's situation. And as far as the guys from the Knicks they added, you know, you're absolutely right about J.R. Smith. You know, I think in the right situation with veterans, the guy is capable of playing, you know, as a solid NBA role player. We saw what he did that one season with the Knicks where he was, you know, sixth man of the year, was great off the bench for them. And that was a team that was loaded with veterans. And the veterans in the locker room are able to sort of keep him focused and keep his head in the game. Cleveland, obviously not a full-blown veteran team, but, you know, LeBron James commands all kinds of respect. So I would anticipate J.R. Smith fitting in much better. And as for Shumpert, you're right. You know, his defense recently hasn't lived up to the reputation. If you look at individual defensive numbers with all that those advanced statistics, I'm not a huge fan of that stuff, but it doesn't paint Shumpert in a favorable light. You know, I think once he gets past his injury, you're looking at a guy that can score a little bit, can be a good wing defender, and, you know, for the most part, you know, Cleveland bolstered his bench in a big way. You know, you had Mozgov, Smith, and Shumpert, and now they got three legitimate rotation players that could really help improve that roster.
How about this? Is it better for J.R. Smith to be in Cleveland than New York?
Well, probably not for him, right? I mean, like, he enjoys all that New York has to offer. But from a basketball perspective, in terms of, you know, the distractions being a lot less, there's got to be a lot less nightlife in Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland's a major city, but it's not New York City, right? So, you know, guys can get into trouble anywhere if that's really what they want to do. But I think you're right. I mean, the distraction factor has to be a lot less, and especially because it's a new town for him. He doesn't know anybody. He doesn't have all his friends and family set up there. So, you know, there might be something to that.
Yeah, I just think that the setting is a little better for him to make. Again, I don't think he's going to be the answer to all their problems. But I think what Cleveland did was reset and reboot. They, as part of this, remember, Griffin, the GM, came out and threw his weight behind David Blatt for now. Through the rest of this year, David Blatt's the guy. Buy in to what he's selling. So we'll see. I mean, does LeBron come back from this and actually hustle on defense all the time and get back on defense and some things he wasn't really leading by example doing? Can they get everybody going on the same page? Can Kevin Love's body language improve so he doesn't look like he's been, you know, an orphan in movie Annie at the beginning of this thing? They, you know, the pieces are there, and, you know, they've I don't want to say that they certainly didn't, you know, move all their chips into the middle here, you know, on these moves, but they moved them for this year and a little bit of next year. Like, they moved a lot of big chips in. This is the group they're going to go with for a while, and now they got to find a way to make it work. And if Blatt doesn't make it work, it'll be somebody else next year.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right with that. And, you know, they're not going to get rid of the coach in his first season, no matter what happens, right? Unless LeBron James walked into the front office and said, "I want this guy gone," which he's not going to do. He's not that type of player to try to blow things up in the middle of the season. You know, Blatt's job is secure this year. For sure. I think the biggest problem, you know, facing the Cavaliers, you know, even going forward for the rest of the season, when you look at LeBron missing time, you know, Kyrie missed some time, this team needs to gel, you know, from a chemistry standpoint. And, you know, those lost games, it's not so much about wins and losses because the East is so bad. You know, it doesn't really matter. You know, the Cavaliers could sneak in as the seventh or eighth seed, and if they're at full strength, they'll still be scary come playoff time. But all these games, you know, time is going by, and they're losing a valuable opportunity to get to sort of know each other out there on the basketball court.
And they're going to need to, because the East is a little deeper than they. I mean, as much as we like to mock it, and it's not the West. I mean, the West is. You can make a case for seven or eight teams coming out of the West. It's ridiculous. I mean, that said, there it's better than it was. I mean, Toronto can score on anybody. They're slumping a little bit right now, but they have an elite offense and some very good players, and Kyle Lowry should be in the All-Star game. I'm higher on Washington than a lot of people. I think if they're fully healthy and Nene's back, that they're a real threat. I don't think they can just coast through the playoffs, and of course, we haven't talked about the Atlanta Hawks, but I don't think the Cavaliers or the Bulls, and obviously I think the Bulls are everybody's team to beat. That's kind of the standard. If, like, that's the team you're going to have to beat in the playoffs to get out of the East right now. The Cavaliers can't just, like, hey, we're going to pull this together in the last 3 weeks and make it and coast into the conference finals. It's not going to work that way. After the first round in the East and even that 4-5 matchup, it's not going to be that simple.
Yeah, we actually have four teams in the East, right? We got Atlanta, who we'll talk about in a second. We got the Toronto Raptors, who are going to get DeRozan back probably in the next week or so.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they're going to be formidable. I think you're right. I think Lowry is going to make the All-Star team, and then, you know, Dwayne Casey won't have to punch anybody else in the face, as he threatened to do earlier this week if Lowry doesn't make it as a reserve. The Bulls, I think we agree, they're sort of the team to beat. They're the favorites in the East. And then the Wizards, you know, so that's four teams besides the Cavaliers that could all give Cleveland trouble in a postseason series. So let's talk a little bit about the Atlanta Hawks right now. Obviously, top of the Eastern Conference, winners of six straight. Not a lot of people talking about the Atlanta Hawks, you know, not one star player, you know, on that team who's sort of leading it. It's true team basketball. And, you know, their head coach came from that San Antonio Spurs system. That's what he's running now. And their offensive sets look very Spurs-like. You know, they're sort of an equal opportunity offense. They have five players averaging in double figures. They go 10 guys deep in their rotations. You know, how good are the Atlanta Hawks?
Very. I mean, I think they have a legitimate chance to come out of the East. I do. I mean, first off, you were mentioning the Spursian aspect to them. People that don't know this, Mike Budenholzer, their coach, and Greg Popovich way back. Popovich recruited Budenholzer to Pomona Pitzer when he was Pomona to the college to play for them back in the day.
Way back.
They played at this little this tiny little liberal arts college where where Popovich got his start, but where he recruited Budenholzer, and then they stayed friends and they followed him through all the way up. It goes way back. He is as ingrained in the system. And remember, Danny Ferry was the GM and helped set up a lot of this team. Who also came out of that Spurs front office network. They've tried to build, Spurs East a little bit, and it worked, or Southeast, if you wish. And it worked. They are selfless. I think the question we're going to have about them come the playoffs is, you know what? You're a great team, and you play a team even, and you get to those, you're down one with 5 seconds to go at the end of a playoff game. It's really nice to have Kevin Durant or LeBron James or whoever you're going to use to create those shots. They don't have that guy. I mean, Al Horford's really good. Jeff Teague is playing at an all-star level. Paul Millsap is. I think the question is, can they do that in the playoffs? But, when options start to get taken away, that said, I think they can. I think that they're really close, and I love the way they're playing. I love the selflessness of this team. And Teague is another guy who I'd like to see make – I'd like to see Teague and Lowry both make the all-star team out of the East, even though the point guard's deep over there, just because those teams have to be represented.
Yeah, and just the fact that, a couple days ago a video was going making the rounds where it was like 4 minutes of Hawks after timeout plays, just kind of spliced together, right? So, if you're an X's and O's guy, it's basically basketball porn is what you're watching, right? It's this constant motion, guys setting screens, leading to open looks, but what I found interesting about that is that most of those shots in that video were Kyle Korver just hitting ridiculous shots, at the end. Now, there was some space created by all that motion, but you're talking about a guy who's shooting 51% from three-point distance this season, and there's not a whole lot of guys in the league. We're talking like maybe Steph Curry, maybe Klay Thompson, but dude, he's coming off screens, he's flying, his feet aren't set, he's elevating, moving to one side and just draining these shots. I think, without Kyle Korver, those plays don't look exactly, things don't turn out as well for the Hawks.
Yeah, well, you've got to have – look, and the Spurs do this too. You've got to have the floor spacing. You've got to have some guys who knock down the threes. They just happen to have as good a three-point shooter as there is in the league. I think Steph's a better pure shooter in the sense that he can go off the dribble better because his ability to go off the dribble or catch and shoot, and it has a little more versatility. But if it's just pure shooting contest, Korver's right with him. I mean, he is ridiculous. And I got the chance to watch him out in Las Vegas with Team USA this summer, and it's just his range is like the second he steps in the building. It's not even it's the line is kind of a meaningless thing that he's trying to stay behind, but he can be way behind it. And you're right, they do a nice job of setting him up off that stuff. So they have the tools. They're using their tools well. And how much do we want to see that in the NBA? Because there's so many teams that don't do this well enough, where they just put their guys in positions to play to their strengths and succeed. They're doing that really well in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think anytime you have a team that's balanced where there's multiple guys that could hurt you on a given offensive possession and you have those players buying in where basically like, hey, we're just going to run these sets and whoever's open is going to take the shot. There's no ego, there's no ball hogs, there's no I'm the alpha male, I need to get my points. when you have teams like that and you can get those guys to buy in, you're going to have success. And I think we're seeing that in Atlanta so far this season.
And they're defending well. We got to throw that in. They are a top 10 defensive team, even though they, you know, they don't have the traditional shot blocker and stuff. They're defending well enough. I there's no reason they can't come out of these. Again, I you and I have said this. We think the Bulls are the team to beat. I think that they're the mark. But Atlanta could get them, especially if the Bulls aren't playing at their peak or, you know, let's say hypothetically Tom Thibodeau runs his guys into the ground by not giving them the break. I know that would never happen.
In Chicago? No, that would never happen in Chicago.
No. But if it did, I mean, those kind of things, the Hawks are one of those teams who could step in.
All right, well, let's shift out west here. Let's take a look at the Western Conference playoff picture because, you know, obviously the West is just ridiculously loaded this season. You know, you look at the East, the eighth place team is, you know, 6 games under .500 in the West. You know, you got, let's see, 5 teams winning better than 69% of their games so far this season. But where it gets real interesting is at the bottom of that conference. Right now, you got the Spurs and the Suns essentially tied, you know, for that eighth spot. San Antonio's up, you know, percentage points over Phoenix, but they're both 8.5 games out of first. Oklahoma City, 4 games behind San Antonio and Phoenix. You know, everybody's expected that the Suns would be the team to have the drop-off, but they finally are starting to click a little bit, putting it together. They've won 4 straight, 8 out of their last 10. They're playing good basketball. San Antonio's slumping a little bit, dealing with some injury issues. And Oklahoma City hasn't sort of found its groove yet with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. So one of these teams isn't going to make the playoffs. Is it possible in some universe that the San Antonio Spurs miss the postseason?
Well, in Stephen Hawking's world of infinite universes, there's one. I'm not sure it's this one. You know what? And I'm not alone on this. If somebody on Twitter the other day sent me a reminder, like, hey, remember this article from, I think it was 2010, maybe 2009, 10, 11, somewhere. Because when you wrote the Spurs obituary, it's a link to an old PBT article. I'm like, yeah, and I'm not alone. Like, you'd be hard-pressed to find NBA writers who have not written the Spurs obituary at some point and been proven wrong. And I think everybody's a little hesitant that all they've got to do is get – they've got the same guys back, and everybody, you just keep waiting for them to find that groove again. And I can't think, not to use a double negative, I can't think they're not going to. I believe that at some point they'll find enough of a groove to make the playoffs. And then, you know, I've come to care less about the seedings in the West.
Yeah.
I mean, it matters, but the conference is so deep. And, I mean, again, we were talking about Oklahoma City's 4.5 out. I think they'll put it together. They'll make a run. There's people in Oklahoma City who think, oh, we're going to get up to the 5 or 6 seed. No, you're not. You're getting to 7 max. That's as high as you're going to get this year. But it doesn't matter because any team that comes out of the West is going to have won on the road. They're going to have to have come from behind in a series. Nobody is coasting through this. You know, this is not some easy thing. It's going to be 3 tough rounds to get out. It's going to be attrition and everything else. So I don't think the seedings matter as much, and I don't think the Spurs are as worried about it. I mean, obviously Popovich has never seemed worried about it. But I just can't write them off because I just got a feeling like at some point they're going to string together 12 straight wins and kind of put themselves in position and just if they're playing like they can play come the playoffs, watch out.
What do you think is the timetable sort of for the Thunder to start to figure things out and put things together? There's still a couple games under .500, like we just said, 4 games out of the playoffs. You know, what's going on in Oklahoma City and sort of how much time do they have to continue to really play basically .500 basketball is what they've been playing. When do they need to sort of flip that switch? There can't be much time left.
No, they've got to get it going pretty soon. And I think they'll start to, but you're right. I mean, they can't – the challenge, again, we keep talking about how deep the West is. That's their challenge. They're not going to get a cupcake section of the schedule like, hey, for these 3 weeks, we're just going to rack up a bunch of wins because it's soft. That ain't coming out West. Like, they're going to have to earn this. They're going to have to beat teams ahead of them, and they haven't done that consistently yet. I still think this is another team where, you know, I'm not as sold on Waiters helping them that much. We'll see. But whether or not Waiters helps them out, this is a team that made the conference finals last year and just has to get everybody back on that page and going again, and I think they will. I still think Phoenix ends up the odd team out, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think. I mean, like you said, 4 games is not that going to be easy to make up because the Suns aren't coming back to the pack, man. They're going to keep winning a lot of games.
Yeah, they've been playing really well recently. They finally are starting to like get some rotations and get the lineups, you know, figured out. Guys, you know, all those guards are figuring out how to share the ball. So
They're just healthy. I mean, they've got Bledsoe missed time, Dragic missed time. Like, they're finally back.
You know, talking about Dion Waiters and the Thunder, does that seem like a little bit of a desperation trade by Oklahoma City? Now, I like Waiters overall. Like, I think he's got a lot of potential. You know, as long as his next contract, he's not trying to get insanely overpaid. You know, I think you got a talent there that can be molded. He's young, man. He's like 22, 23 years old. I mean, yeah, he's had his problems, you know, personality-wise, trying to fit in with Kyrie. A lot of that was because the organization, well, Kyrie, first of all, is way better right now than Dion Waiters and has proven it. But the organization sort of never gave Waiters, you know, even a chance to be in that conversation, you know, so he's been playing with a chip on his shoulder. But, you know, so I think he's salvageable is my point. I think Waiters, you know, there's a long time left in his career for him to become a productive and consistent NBA basketball player. But right now for the Thunder, does that seem like sort of a desperate deal? I mean, does that even address a need for Oklahoma City right now?
Third scorer and Bedeth does address a need. It's just on the wing, this is why it was a low-risk move for them. They're loaded. Like, if this guy doesn't work out, they still play Tyler Lamb a ton. Or not, I mean, not Tyler Lamb, but they play Lamb a ton. They've got wing depth. They're okay. If Waiters can add to that, then we see less Perry Jones. We see less Roberson. But I don't know I don't know that they need him, and I don't know that. But I think that they're taking the gamble. Look, we've got to find a third scorer, and their big concern: what if Reggie Jackson bolts? Which is possible.
I think it's likely. You know, especially you know the way he played when Westbrook was out. You know, Oklahoma City has a history of letting sort of that guy off the bench go, especially if that guy off the bench wants to be quote unquote the man. You know, famously, James Harden is now gone, which, by the way, if Harden somehow wins MVP this year, I think the Thunder should fire their GM on general principle. Despite the other stuff that was going on, obviously, they had guys in that role, didn't want to max out Harden. You know, Harden wanted to be, you know, more prominent, you know, kind of be the man on a team. But, you know, I don't know, man. I just think Reggie Jackson has been so good this season. He's going to get paid. Teams are going to come after him with big money offers. And I'm not so sure, you know, Oklahoma City hasn't yet proven that they're willing to step up, you know, and pay that guy off the bench.
Well, and more than that, if you hear Reggie Jackson talk, it's about opportunity. He wants to start. He wants the ball in his hands a little more. He wants a chance. Look, you're only going to get the ball in your hands so much. And you should only get the ball in your hands so much on a team with Russ and KD.
Yeah.
Like, those guys should have the ball a lot for a reason. So I think it is very possible that he gets to this summer, looks at the money, and if the money's equal everywhere, then he's going to look at the place that's going to give him the most run, the most ball in his hands time. And that may be – this is the kind of case where the guy might leave a contender to go to a slightly lesser team because he likes it as a better fit for himself right now.
Yeah, that'll for sure be interesting to see how that plays out. Okay, so let's call it right now. So I don't think either of us sees the top six teams in the West right now not making the playoffs. You got Golden State, Portland, Memphis, Dallas, Houston, and the Clippers. Like that's
none of them are falling off.
None of them are falling off. So and you know probably neither are the Spurs, but record wise they're right there with the Suns and eighth.
Yeah.
So who gets the two last spots? We got Spurs, Suns, Oklahoma City. I'm not even going to put New Orleans and Denver in the conversation because I just don't think they can put together enough wins the rest of the season to get there.
I feel bad for teams like the Pelicans who, if they went to this, you know, 16 teams make the playoffs with the 16 best records, they'd be in and they should be. I mean, that's a good team with some nice, obviously Anthony Davis with some nice pieces, but you're right. I can't see them finishing higher than maybe even 10th in the, you know, the conference, which is kind of... I'm going to go with the Thunder and the Spurs and feel bad for the Suns for the second year in a row because they may again get 47, they had 48 last year. They could be in the 47-48 win range and again miss the playoffs. But I just got a feeling that's the weakest link of those groups. I mean, it'd be easy to say the Spurs can't pull it together, but again, I can't go there.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and say mini controversial here, but I'll say the Spurs and the Suns stay in and Oklahoma City stays out. I mean, they haven't shown me yet that they can put it together for any extended stretches. We expect them to. They have the talent. They have the guys there. You know, who knows? Maybe Deion Waiters turns into sixth man of the year and all of a sudden, you know, the Thunder start rolling, but, you know, I just don't see it.
It is possible. And that's the thing. Look, there's a couple of really good teams in the West who are not going to make the playoffs. And that's, again, that brings us back to the discussion we've had before about modifying. We don't need to get into today about modifying the playoff system, because who's going to, I mean, there's going to be two or three teams in the East below 500 that will make the playoffs.
All right, so let's wrap this thing up by taking a look at the MVP race. You know, always interesting to look at, you know, who's going to win most valuable player. Let's avoid the topic of what does that mean, because what it means in the NBA is that you're one of the best players on one of the top, you know, two or three teams in the league. That's what it's meant, you know, for the last, you know, 15 seasons or so. I looked at that at the beginning of the year, like, that's what happens with MVP. So for that reason, I'm ruling Anthony Davis completely out despite his stellar season, because look, New Orleans isn't going to make the playoffs. You can't give the MVP to a guy that on a team that doesn't make the playoffs, and there are other, you know, candidates that are probably far more deserving. So who do you have right now as your top two or three guys in your MVP race?
Well, I will say this. Davis would be on my ballot.
Sure.
Probably in the – maybe as high as three, certainly in the four and five. Because remember, as a media voter, you get five slots. He would be on my ballot somewhere.
Okay.
I couldn't leave him off. To me, the top three have been, and with all due respect to Kyle Lowry, have been Stephen Curry, Marc Gasol, and James Harden. Harden has improved his defense. Gasol has been rock solid and smart and you know, doing everything with Memphis, but I'd probably give it to Curry right now. He's stepped up on his defense. Best offense, best defense, you know, statistically top offense and defense, can do so many things, hits the clutch shots. He'd be my guy right now. And it's strange to think this, by the way. You know what we're not talking about? When we went into this, we're like, well, who's going to take it this year, Durant or LeBron?
Yeah.
Who would make the ballot?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, right? I mean, you're talking about, you know, Durant had just a miraculous season last year, you know, MVP worthy. LeBron was right there, and neither of those guys were in the conversation. So,
yeah, LeBron's another guy who's going to end up on, you know, the four or five spots on ballots, because he's still the best player in the world, but he hasn't brought it at the same level this year. He just hasn't.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, impossible to argue really with Stephen Curry. You know, falls into the criteria of the best player on the best team. You know, Golden State's 28-5 on the season, best you know, in the league. So, and Curry's been ridiculous. You know, and let's not forget, you know, the entertainment factor. I mean, Stephen Curry might be the most fun player to watch in the game right now. The guy is ridiculous. He puts on just the ball handling alone, you know, forgetting about his ridiculous shots. I mean, you know, I got to check out the Warriors twice in person when I was in LA over the Christmas week. They, you know, they lost both those games to the Lakers and the Clippers, but man, Curry is just ridiculous. I mean, the shots that he takes, right? Forget about, you know, the percentage, you know, he shoots well, but he takes these shots that are just such a high degree of difficulty that looks like there's no way those should go in. And they, not only do they go in, when he makes shots, they don't even hit the rim. They're just all net. I mean, the guy is just as skilled as they get. So, you know, tough to argue with the choice for Curry. I think right now for me, I would have James Harden slightly ahead of him. Only because of Harden, you know, he's not entertaining, right? Not entertaining to watch a guy that, you know, leads the league.
If you like free throws, it is.
Yeah, he leads the league in getting to the foul line. You know, if you like efficiency, he's your guy. You know, you look at his, you know, effective field goal percentage, through the roof, tons of free throw attempts. He has, you know, three times a season he's dropped more than 40 points in a game. But I like the way he carried the Rockets when Dwight Howard was out. When Dwight Howard missed those 11 games due to injury, you know, Houston played some good teams and they were 8-3 during that stretch. So I would probably have Harden slightly above Curry, but you know, you can't argue with Stephen Curry at this point. And you're right, you know, where do you put LeBron on an MVP ballot? I mean, right now, you know, you got to say fourth and fifth, and maybe Anthony Davis, you know, sneaks into that third spot.
Yeah, and we're leaving guys of quality off this list.
Sure.
You know, like I said, like Kyle Lowry's over in Toronto, who's having a monster year. And I'll tell you, if you were able to string it together over a stretch of time, Russell Westbrook has been phenomenal when he's played. I mean, he's been injured for a chunk of the season, but he has put up ridiculous numbers with ridiculous efficiency this year. So I mean, there's a lot of guys who could move on to this ballot. I'd say this is not one of those years where one guy, you know, we're not quite at the halfway point, but as we're approaching it, this is not a case where one or two guys have started to pull away from the crowd. There's still a crowd. This looks more like those marathons at mile 13 with about 15 guys in the pack still.
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Westbrook. You know, that then we get into the conversation of what is the MVP or what should the MVP be? You know, Westbrook himself has been phenomenal, but the Thunder, two games under 500, not even in the playoff picture. So, you know, you're talking about guys.
Step back to that, yeah. He's got to continue these kind of numbers, and they have to get into the dance. And then, you know, again, where do you slot him on a ridiculous team? And it's, you know, it's good guys are getting left off this list. I'm sorry, Laker fans, Kobe won't quite make the cut this year, but I mean, we're not even mentioning, look, Blake Griffin's had a nice year. There's a lot of guys who just...
Chris Paul is stringing together yet another ridiculous season that goes unnoticed in LA because the Clippers, even at 24-12, they're basically played below expectations so far this season.
You know what? It's worth having this conversation. They're not much fun to watch right now. Remember 2 years ago you had to watch the Clippers because the same thing you just said about Curry. They were the entertainment factor. They were going to be Lob City. But more than just the dunks, they were just fun to watch. They're not that much fun right now. They don't seem to be playing like they're having fun.
I think the loss of Alvin Gentry on the bench, you know, he left the Clippers to go be alongside Steve Kerr in Golden State this season. He ran the offense for the Clippers last year. Clippers were top offensive team last year. They were fun to watch. He's gone. And, you know, the efficiency and those sets are gone. Like, you watch the Clippers play now, there's not a lot going on offense. You know, there's maybe one pick and roll at the top or on the side. And then, you know, Chris Paul tries to get into the paint and make something happen. It's not always, you know, successful. You know, still the lobs are there, right? I mean, anytime you got DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin, you know, you're going to get those lobs from time to time. But there's not a lot of guys on that team that can create their own shot. I mean, obviously, we've talked about it more than once. Clippers' biggest weakness is a lack of a perimeter guy, a wing scorer, right? I mean, that's really what they're missing more than anything. And you're right. You know, the offense has not been nearly as fun to watch this year as it was last season.
I will tell you this much, and I've heard this from a couple of people, but they are burning up the phone lines trying to get something done. But their hands are tied. If they announced, you know, that they're not going to trade Jamal Crawford.
You can't.
Okay, outside of Crawford and those five starters, who on that team do you want?
Well, yeah, but you can't trade Jamal Crawford. I mean, he's the whole reason the Clippers won that Christmas Day game against the Warriors. The Clippers missed.
I'm not saying you can't. I don't know. But what other they're trying to make a move. Remember, they're up against almost a hard cap. They've only got $1 million in change left, so they can't absorb a salary. They don't have any assets. They're just as hard as Doc Rivers is trying to get guys like Jeff Green. I just don't know that they have the assets to pull off the kind of deal. I think the Clippers may be the Clippers this year. I think you may see that pretty much this roster.
Well, I thought it was interesting when we heard all those, you know, sort of trade rumblings earlier this week. What was there? Jared Cunningham was traded.
Yes. Well, that cleared a roster spot for
you. Yeah, but at the time that went down, though, what we were hearing was reports that the Clippers may have been targeting somebody like Tony Roten, which, if you're Philadelphia, why would you trade that guy? You know, he's one of your young assets for the future. He's one of the few guys on the team that you actually want to keep, right? So, you know, Philadelphia is not going to take a draft pick for that guy. But that's sort of the type of direction that maybe the Clippers have to go if they're looking at players in trade. They're going to have to target teams that, like Philadelphia, that aren't going to be any good this season. You know, they could have targeted, you know, the Knicks for a draft pick, but the Knicks are already, you know, somewhat, you know, cleared out at this point. There's not much talent left on that roster. So, you know, where do they look in terms of trying to find players that, you know, they're going to have to target a bad team that's, you know, not expecting to win this season? I just don't know, you know, what players might be available that could really help them out this season.
Roten is a guy that was fun to watch the last couple summers at Summer League because that's a guy who you saw in the first year and you're like, eh. He came back, hey, he's really improved. And just, you know, a couple of years now at Summer League, you're like, wow, that guy's really worked on his game. He's really busted it to get his game to an NBA level. And he's not as great. He's not going to put up the kind of numbers he's putting up in Philadelphia anywhere else because it's opportunity. Somebody's got to score. Somebody's got to have the ball in their hands. But he's made himself into a solid NBA player now. And he, you know, I think that that's part of what Philadelphia is looking for, even if they flip him for another asset down the line. They were looking for these guys who could do that.
Well, you know, he's the definition of what you want on a rebuilding team. He's a good player, improved season to season, and he's on a rookie scale contract. I mean, that's what you need if you truly want to build, you know, winning teams and contenders. We've seen around the league when teams try to rebuild on the fly, you get up against a salary cap. You just mentioned it with the Clippers. You know, they have no assets. They have no room to add anybody. You know, it becomes difficult if you have only a veteran team or only a team, you know, led by superstars. You know, it becomes very difficult to turn that team into a contender.
Well, and I think the example we talked about, what Cleveland did earlier, and Cleveland still has some assets. Like I said, they didn't push everything into the middle, but they moved a bunch. But think of the Cleveland before LeBron left the first time, and just like they started grasping at straws and doing anything. Like, you don't want to become that team where you don't have assets and you start grasping at straws to make yourself better. You've got to have some kind of plan.
Yeah, the desperation in Cleveland was actually kind of hilarious, especially last season. You know, that, you know, we saw Andrew Bynum, we saw, you know, Luol Deng, we saw, it was like all kinds of crazy stuff. They're just basically doing anything they could to try to make the playoffs.
Bynum just wrecked Cleveland, he wrecked Philadelphia. He left a trail of destruction in his path.
That poor guy. All right, good stuff as always, man. We'll look forward to doing it next week. Make sure you guys check out all of our NBA content, and there sure is a lot of it on a daily basis. ProBasketballTalk.NBCSports.com. Kurt, good stuff as always. We'll do it again next week.
You stay warm, man. I'll talk to you soon.